Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Hoonah wants to legally join an area of land to form what would be the biggest borough in southeast Alaska. Juneau Empire reported Tuesday that the city of Hoonah filed a petition earlier this month for a technical review by the Local Boundary Commission of its proposed borough. The community of about 800 residents, located 40 miles southwest of Juneau, wants to join an area of more than 35,000 square miles. The new borough would include Glacier Bay, Icy Strait, a portion of the Chatham Strait, parts of Chichagof Island, and Excursion Inlet. Growth at the Kensington Gold Mine means it will need to expand its footprint considerably to operate for another decade. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports from the remote mine between Juneau and Haines.
Everyone going underground hangs a personal metal tag, basically a dog tag, on a plywood board with rows of hooks. At a glance, the supervisor knows who's in the mine at any given time. This modern mine has expanded to around 28 miles of underground tunnels. Many roughly follow veins that were first blasted out more than a century ago. General Manager Mark Kiesling explains why the technology's changed, the local names have not.
Kensington came from the historic Kensington mine. The Joellen came from the Joellen mine. So we've got Elmira as one of our targets, and then Comet's another one of the targets, which also comes from the Comet mine.
There's heavy machinery loading ore to be milled into gold concentrate. It's dark, dusty, and as we get closer, loud.
And he's loading right now, so that you've got active mining going on. This is the mine, the Elmira, and start our drift moving forward.
The drift is a newly cut passage that follows the vein that the company is just now starting to mine. The point of showing all this is to demonstrate that 10 years into operations, there's still a lot of ore left to mine. But the mine company faces a challenge. It's running out of room for the waste rock and tailings it's generating.
We know that there's additional veins out there, and we have additional resource here at Kensington that we haven't turned into reserves that would be beyond 2024.
2024. That's the year the company says it'll be out of storage space for both waste rock and mine tailings. Core Alaska, a subsidiary of Chicago-based Core Mining, has already started the permitting process to expand. Filings with the U.S. Forest Service envision expanding two existing waste rock storage piles, adding two new ones, and to expand its footprint by 150 acres of the mine. It's on a patchwork of public and private land. More controversially, the plan calls for expanding its tailings treatment facility. And that's a body of water that once appeared on maps as Lower Slate Lake. A U.S. Supreme Court decision in 2009 struck down environmentalist legal challenges. And for the first time in the United States, a mine operator was permitted to convert a natural lake into a holding pond for liquid mine waste. To expand, the mine company wants to raise the lake's artificial dam by 36 feet and buffer the opposite shoreline with rock. Kevin Eppers is the mine's environmental manager.
It would enable us to contain another 4 million tons of tailings. Also, there would be a causeway right up here that would prevent any tailings from the tailings facility or any water from going into Upper Slate Lake.
The Upper Slate Lake he's referring to is a second natural lake that so far has been untouched by mine waste. Eventually, the company plans to flood Lower Slate Lake so that the two merge into one after the mine closes down for good. Kiesling says the two lakes would only merge after the lower lake containing submerged mine waste is brought up to state water standards. That would be accomplished by filtering the water at its wastewater treatment plant.
We would continue to treat until we reach those levels, and if we weren't able to reach those levels, we would continue to treat and treat and treat. That's the reclamation plan.
After which the mine company would allow the water to rise in the lower lake, spilling over the man-made causeway and leaving behind a single body of water.
It's going to be restored as a high-quality lake.
So far, a half dozen people have written to the U.S. Forest Service about the expansion. Two were in support, noting that Kensington Mine is one of Southeast Alaska's largest employers. Four letters were critical. One in particular noted how in August, the Environmental Protection Agency fined the mining company more than $500,000 for permit violations. Kensington's proposed expansion has reignited debate over the long-term safety of the mine on Lynn Canal and the surrounding watershed.
Berners Bay is a natural resource that, for all intents and purposes, has existed forever.
Guy Archibald is with the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. The group unsuccessfully sued to prevent Kensington from opening in the mid-2000s.
We hope that it will continue to exist forever and not be completely destroyed by a mine that lasted 20 to 30 years.
One of the EPA violations was for acidic runoff along the tailings dam. Mine engineers have been spraying concrete to try and contain the runoff, with mixed results. EPA has since modified the mine's permit to allow acid rock runoff into the lake, but only after levying fines this summer. Kiesling defends the mine's environmental record and predicts raising the water levels in the tailings pond would address the acid runoff problem.
By building the higher dam, we feel that that's going to give us an opportunity to kind of put that issue to rest.
Kensington's proposed expansion will go under a formal environmental review, but first the public has until November 7th to weigh in on how much or how little the mine should be allowed to expand its footprint in Tongass National Forest. Reporting from the Kensington Mine, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Supporters of a proposal to rewrite Alaska's oil tax structure have gotten approval to gather signatures in a bid to qualify the measure for the ballot. Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer certified the initiative application and announced it in an email sent after business hours Tuesday. Supporters will have to gather 28,501 qualified signatures to advance the proposal. The campaign behind the proposal says the measure is aimed at Alaska's legacy oil fields and increasing the state's share of production revenue. Kara Moriarty, president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, called the proposal a flawed attempt to adopt complicated tax policy through the initiative process. 30 years after the Exxon Valdez oil spill, the state of Alaska is looking at whether to change its requirements for oil spill prevention and response plans. One conservationist worries the move could lead to a watering down of environmental regulations. State Environmental Conservation Commissioner Jason Bruni says there's no intent to do away with the plans. In a release, he said he'd heard from Alaskans that contingency plans are unnecessarily burdensome while lacking corresponding environmental benefits. But in an interview, he said he also had heard from those who think the rules don't go far enough. The department is taking public comment as it considers whether to propose changes. Governor Mike Dunleavy has adopted an open-for-business mantra. Bob Shavelson with Cook Inlet Keeper says he sees that as code for rollbacks. This week's Alaska Federation of Natives convention comes at a key moment for Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy. In his first few months in office, AFN and the governor took shots at each other over Dunleavy's budget proposal. The budget targeted programs important to Alaska Natives. One Native corporation has endorsed the campaign to recall them. Now, with that recall fight looming, Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media reports on how the convention could preview some of Dunleavy's next steps when it comes to his relationship with a potent voting bloc.
Earlier this year in May, Governor Mike Dunleavy sent off a bluntly worded letter to Julie Kitka, who heads the Alaska Federation of Natives. The letter defended Dunleavy's proposed cuts to state government, accused AFN of being divisive, and posed some sharp questions at the organization. "What are your plans," Dunleavy asked, "to fix rural education and problems of domestic violence and sexual assault among Alaska's Native population?"
Let me ask you this. Did you see the letter we were responding to?
John Moeller is Dunleavy's rural and Native affairs advisor, and he's Alaska Native himself. Moeller pointed out that the governor's letter came in response to one sent by AFN a month earlier that called Dunleavy's budget approach misguided and inflammatory. AFN's letter also expressed concerns about claims about the budget that the governor's advisors made at an April meeting. But Moeller says he felt Dunleavy's office made a sincere effort to engage with AFN at the meeting.
We, speaking on the behalf of the governor's team, had a completely different view in terms of how the meeting went. So, quite frankly, the letter from the AFN was a little shocking.
Suffice to say that things remain tense. Dunleavy has vetoed line items important to AFN and Alaska Native communities, like money for law enforcement and assistance payments to municipalities. A tribal advisory committee created by Dunleavy's predecessor has stopped meeting. And in August, SERI, the Anchorage-based Alaska Native Regional Corporation, endorsed the Dunleavy recall campaign. Melanie Banke runs a Nome-based tribal organization called Kowarik and had a widely publicized confrontation with Dunleavy when he visited Nome earlier this year. She says her group has invited his administration to work with them, but it's gotten little traction.
That invitation still stands with all state agencies and the governor, but there hasn't been much knocking on our doors.
Now AFN is holding its convention in Fairbanks with the theme Good Government Alaska Driven, which many see as a swipe at the governor. The convention program says Dunleavy, quote, tested the bounds of that principle this year. Next year's theme is set, too, with a nod toward the 2020 election. Good Government Alaska Decides. But AFN President Julie Kitka says the themes are less about targeting the governor personally and more about articulating a different vision of state government.
What we're having trouble as a state is setting our priorities. And so our Good Government Alaska Driven, our Good Government Alaska Decides is about a call to action for people to be engaged in setting the priorities for the state.
AFN's convention will be focused on policy, but the looming question here is a political one, whether Dunleavy will find a way to repair his relationship with the Federation and other Native groups before the courts rule on whether to let the recall campaign move forward. It's an important question because the Native and rural voting bloc can be a pivotal one, and Alaska's regional Native corporations can also be deep-pocketed donors to campaigns. Those corporations can be slow about taking political stances, says political consultant Jim Lotzfeldt, but they did that in 2010 when they raised more than $1 million to help Republican U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski win a write-in campaign over Tea Party candidate Joe Miller.
They try to stay above the fray. Now, there's times where they see certain existential crisis, and the nomination of Joe Miller to the U.S. Senate clearly was one of them. So they'll have to decide whether they're at one of those moments in time again.
Moeller, the governor's advisor, says Dunleavy's administration still sees a number of areas for partnerships with the Native community and tribal entities, like advancing an existing compact on child welfare and protection and exploring a new one on education.
The doors aren't closed and they never were closed. You know, I mean, however people come to those conclusions is their business. But nonetheless, I'm hoping for a great AFM.
Dunleavy is set to deliver a 15-minute speech at the convention Thursday morning. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Hurst.
The path appears to be clearing for Anchorage Republican Representative Josh Rivak to join the state Senate. Multiple senators say they support confirming Rivak, including Senate President Kathy Geisel. The Republican senators are scheduled to meet with Rivak on November 2nd. He needs a majority of the 12 Republicans to confirm his appointment. And finally, the new head of Alaska's Iditarod plans to meet with an animal rights group long devoted to putting an end to the world's most famous sled dog race. Iditarod CEO Rob Urbach says race organizers have for decades ignored or taken a defensive stance against people for ethical treatment of animals. He says that obviously hasn't worked, and he's started engaging in a dialogue with the group about dog care. Urbach says he'll meet with PETA Executive Vice President Tracy Ryman Thursday at her organization's Los Angeles office. Ryman says she plans to talk at the meeting about the differences between the needs and behavior of dogs and those of humans. Urbach says he hopes to find common ground through education about the race and treatment of the dogs. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, October 16th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.